Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
For a moment last week, a whole bunch of Albertans who had done the right thing had a chance to second-guess themselves.
We need everyone who's on the fence or those who want to get a shot but have just been putting it off for a while to get their dose now.
Vaccinated Albertans now are eligible for three $1 million draws. The goal to have 70% of those eligible vaccinated this week. If that happens, the real prize is a full reopening of the province.
Alberta's government has joined a growing list of states and provinces and companies offering the chance of amazing, life-changing prizes to lucky citizens who get vaccinated against COVID-19. Sometimes these vaccine lotteries are open to everyone who's had a shot. Sometimes they're only open to people who get their shot now. But that doesn't really matter. What matters is that they appear to work. They work well enough to make me, someone who desperately sought out and took the first vaccine I could get, feel a little bit of FOMO. And that means there's something weird going on here. Because I have no chance at winning a vaccine lottery. Like, none. Neither do you, even if you live in Alberta and even if you get your shot right now. I mean, technically, of course, you have one single minuscule chance. But realistically, you have none. Yet, after early experiments with guaranteed small rewards, you might remember these as a free beer or a baseball ticket for Americans who got vaccinated. Most states in America, with vaccine-hesitant citizens, have moved away from those and towards the big prizes. Why does that work better than, say, paying everybody who gets vaccinated a guaranteed $50? What's happening in our heads that makes us get this calculation so wrong? And if governments continue to see that a mere hint of a bundle of cash can alter our medical decisions, what could they manipulate us into doing next? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Adam Rogers is a senior correspondent at Wired, where he writes about science and miscellaneous geekery. And today, he joins us to talk about vaccine lotteries. Hey, Adam.
Hello there.
Why don't you start by telling us, because it's such a neat idea that kind of showcases both sides of this. Tell us about what United Airlines is doing.
Yeah, this is a fascinating example. And it's especially interesting to me because I'm not sure how to say this in the right way. It's a non-state actor, right? It's not a government using this approach.
Right.
So United Airlines, out of a desire both to encourage people to get vaccinated against COVID-19 and also a great deal of self-interest, after a lot of conversations internally, what they adopted was this idea that anybody who flew and who signed up for Mileage Plus, which is their frequent flyer loyalty program, you know, you get miles or points for every time you fly, and uploaded their vaccination card. In the U.S., you get a little card that says, like, you know, people sign, the pharmacist, whoever signs, says, yes, you got your shots.
Right.
Would be entered into a sweepstakes, a lottery. And the prize, there were a bunch of different prizes, but the big one, the grand prize, was a year of travel for two anywhere the United flies. In United's like super first class, up in the front of the plane that nobody ever gets to see because they close a curtain where there's, you know, good food and I don't know, really nice stuff. It's really nice.
I wouldn't know about
it. Yeah, I don't know. I've only heard rumors. Apparently, it's pretty great. And so that became the inducement. What United wanted to do was say, yes, we want people to fly again. We want people to get vaccinated. We want people to fly in United. Here's the reward that you might win these fabulous prizes. Now, there's a that might has like italics and is underlined, because you're not going to win.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to, one person's going to win, thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of people, however many are going to enter. And in fact, they'll be able to tell from their data, like, okay, we can look and see how many new people signed up for Mileage Plus or how many new people flew with us and what were the dates on their vaccination card, which would be a way to tell, okay, did they get vaccinated after we announced that this was going to be the prize, which would be a pretty good proxy to tell if somebody had actually gone out and done what they hoped, which is wasn't going to get vaccinated or hadn't been vaccinated and then went out and got it. They haven't seen whether that actually worked yet, but they certainly seem to feel like it would. If we're having trouble getting people to get vaccinated, we got that the first group of people who were highly motivated to get a vaccine, like I was, like, I, you know, yes, put it into my arm. Let's do it. Give me the shot, or please, right? And that group of people got their vaccinations as soon as they possibly could. And they had access. They knew how to use the internet in the US so they could get signed up, all that stuff. And then the people who are like anti-vaccine, who are just like, no, I don't believe it. It's a 5G chip that turns you into a werewolf. It's none of those things, but whatever. They're not going to do it. You can't convince them. But there's people in the middle. And so how do you motivate them if they're not getting their shots? I would have thought, like, okay, you give them all $20. Give them all $50. Show up, get your vaccine. Here's a $20 bill. Here's a $50 bill. Here's a gift card to a supermarket, whatever. But in fact, that's not what the behavioral science, what the behavioral economics, and what the research shows. What it shows is what the marketing people at United seem to understand, and governments are starting to try to figure out too, which is that there are some group of people who will move off the dime with the barest possibility of a life-changing prize, much more so than if you guarantee them a $20 gift certificate.
Well, and that's the fascinating thing is how this has evolved, because I remember, obviously, in the United States, you guys were a couple of months ahead of us in terms of ramping up mass vaccination. And one of the things I remember most from those months is seeing free beer if you show us your vaccination card, or for some of the baseball stadiums that were reopening, you know, a free ticket if you come and get your vaccine before you see the game. And those were the kind of things that I was expecting to see whenever we got to the level that we're approaching now in Canada, where we've done most of the easy pickings in terms of people who want it. But we actually haven't seen that up here. What we've seen instead in the one province that's done it is that typical vaccine lottery that some states in your neck of the woods have been doing, right? And what kind of results have we seen from that in the United States?
Not everybody has released data. So what data has come out, so the state of Ohio was the kind of the first place that did a big splashy lottery program. And they saw increases of like overall increases of close to 50% in their vaccination rates in the first like couple of weeks after the they announced the lottery. And that got all sort of confused because you had to say like, okay, well, which age groups was it? Because the minimum age also got lowered. So the teenagers all came in as well. But even if you accounted for that, Ohio saw like a 28% increase or something like that. California instituted a lottery as well. About half a dozen states, maybe it's more now, instituted them. In California, the numbers for vaccinations kind of stabilized, I think, but they didn't spike back up. You didn't see like an N-shaped curve, which is what people were hoping, where like it went up and then it went way down and then it would come up again. I think it's sort of stabilized. What you do see is another proxy measure for success that the Ohio folks talked about was they spent about like $5.5 million US essentially on the program because it was like $5 million prizes initially and then about $500,000 in scholarships for the kids. And they, by their count, they got the equivalent of $28 million of earned media, which is to say that they would have had to spend $28 million to get the same amount of airtime on a CNN or an ABC as they got for free. I'm putting that in air quotes, it wasn't free, as they got just for doing kind of a splashy thing. And that makes a lot of sense because the point of the money, a lot of the money that the states are using for this came from the federal government to encourage people to get vaccinated. So how do you spend that money? This is a way to spend it on these lotteries. And the economics of these giveaways are part of the reason that they're appealing to the people doing them. This is a different sort of behavioral economics than somebody like you or me who are like, well, should I go get vaccinated? Oh, there's a lottery, I'll go do it. The people who are putting them on, you know, it looks like they get more bang for the buck essentially for like, oh, if we put on a lottery, we're going to spend less than we would if we had given $50 to each person or as United chose not to do, given 2,000 mileage points or however many mileage points to everybody because that has a cost for them.
Can you explain maybe the economics of it before we get into the behavioral science? And I mean that from the point of view of what a rational economist would think if you were offering them a choice of taking $50 guaranteed if you get your vaccine versus being entered into a $1 million lottery. I assume they would say that the $50 is what you should grab.
Yeah, the hyper-rational economist, like a classic Chicago school economist, thinks that you're insane for going for a lottery, right? They would say, well, look, here's the difference. A crisp new $50 bill or a lottery ticket that is essentially not worth the paper it's printed on, because by the odds, you're not going to win. So, you know, to them, it's nuts.
But to behavioral economists.
Right. To a behavioral economist, they understand that human beings are a little dumb and they overvalue the possibility of a big win. Because it's fun and because they get to dream about it and because it's entertaining and because they are bad at predicting the future. We are bad. I'm talking like I'm an AI or an alien. Sorry. We are bad at predicting what the future is going to be. We tend to not think bad things are going to happen to us, and we tend to think good things are going to happen to us. So the idea of the possibility of a big win becomes more compelling. Whereas, you know, the converse of that is that if we get told, come get a vaccination and you get a free beer or a baseball ticket or $20, you know, gift card or whatever, then we think that's the value. Somebody else has put a value on getting vaccinated. And so we don't think of not getting sick and dying and not getting someone else sick who then might die. And not putting an end to a global pandemic that in the United States alone was hypothesized would cost in the end $16 trillion. Mm-hmm. All those things are abstract to us. But the concrete thing of like, oh, this vaccination is worth the $20 gift certificate and my time is worth more than that. And it's hard for me to access a vaccine site. And I don't want to risk the possibility of 2 days of side effects, which many of the vaccines come with, because I have finals coming up or because I have stuff to do or because I don't have childcare, because I don't have a ride to a vaccination site. All those things that make it difficult, not impossible, but difficult to get vaccinated become the barrier. And now if it's only worth if some government entity says it's worth $50 to us, it's the inverse of a famous paper called "A Fine as a Price," where if you tell a person or a government or if you tell a corporation, like, if you pollute the oceans, we'll fine you $2 million, then that corporation says, oh, now I know it costs me $2 million to cough toxic waste into the ocean, and so I'll just price that into my product. And then I can do it. And then when the government says, you put toxic waste into the ocean, I just give them the $2 million and all is well. It's the cost of doing business. So this is the inverse. We say, oh, the cost of doing business is like I get $20. That's not worth it to me. I'm not going to go get vaccinated. But if the cost of doing business is $1 million prize, like, oh, wow, getting vaccinated is worth $1 million suddenly in my head as a dopey human being.
How does that leap happen? And do we know why we value something that we have no chance to win that highly? To your point, it seems really stupid.
I mean, it does and it doesn't. I mean, we think that the good things are going to happen to us and the bad things aren't. It's the reason that what an economist sometimes calls a nudge works, and what other behaviorists and some marketers and folks might call gamification, slightly different. But the idea that if you turn something into a game where you can win or lose and you can get points for doing something, that encourages people to do stuff. So, for example, the person who was kind of the main consultant on the Oregon vaccine lottery had come out of the world of finance, where he was a co-founder of a bank, basically, that gamified, that gave people rewards, game-like rewards, even financial ones, just for like saving more money or for getting a retirement account, because they found that they could increase by vast number, like by 50% the number of people who would just, you know, have a bigger savings account if they made that into a game, if they made it something you could win or lose. That has some ethical and behavioral implications in itself, and there's reasons to be very concerned about gamification and reasons to be concerned about nudge type policies like these vaccine lotteries. But like from the behavioral economics side, there's a famous book called Nudge. There's actually a new version of it, a revision coming out in August by a couple of behavioral economists, Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. Sunstein is now an advisor in the Biden administration. Thaler's a Nobel Prize winning economist. And what they said is that you could make people do, this is the ethical thing, because it's weird to make people do stuff, but you could essentially induce people to do things that were policy net benefits, policy wins, population scale wins, that they themselves might not be likely to do, or even wins for themselves that they're not likely to do, by doing things like making the thing fun, making it easy, mm-hmm. you know, making it more possible to do. And the fun part seems to be the critical thing about the lottery, is that it's sort of enjoyable. Gambling is enjoyable. You know, no, people don't go to Las Vegas because they're going to win. You know, you sit down at a blackjack table, really fundamentally the economics there are, you sit down at a blackjack table and lose for 6 hours because it's fun to sit at a blackjack table for 6 hours.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
I had it explained to me once that people don't buy a lottery ticket to win the lottery. They are paying that money to dream about winning the lottery. And that is actually the value they get in return. And they value that at more than the $2 or $3 it costs.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly right. And I could be even more sort of neuropsychiatrically cynical about it and say you're paying for a little squirt of dopamine, you know?
Right.
You go in and you pay your $3 and you get the little jolt of like, woo, this could be great. It's like, you know, it was fun to scratch that off. Like, did I win? Nah. All right. Well, but I had those moments, and that fun is real. You know, it's I think it's a mistake to dismiss the fun. It's clearly a mistake here, because if you can move some subpopulation, there's a lot of different, just thinking about the vaccine thing, there's a lot of different reasons people don't get vaccinated. And if you can cross one or two of those off that list, that increases the number of people who get vaccinated. And that's a net benefit for everybody, because even the anti-vaxxers in this case become free riders, you know, who get the benefits of a larger population of people who are vaccinated around them.
So here's my logical follow-up to that. And, you know, let's use the vaccines as an example. But just to state, these vaccines are incredibly safe. They're incredibly efficacious. Everybody should get vaccinated. These vaccines work. However, it feels kind of icky to have governments psychologically manipulating people into making a health choice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's one of the ethical concerns that I was alluding to a second ago. And as you say, these vaccines are extraordinarily safe, and it's really good to get vaccinated for a bunch of different reasons. There are very, very rare, but occasional outcomes that are bad. There's some association, it's not totally clear which, some people think it's clearer than other, with like significant severe side effects. Very, very rare, but that happens, which in a way is like a negative lottery, weirdly, right? Is that it's almost certainly not going to happen to you, but some people it happened to, and you don't want to hit that lottery. So like, is it ethical then to make someone or try to make someone do something they weren't going to do otherwise? It's a very good question. And different, you know, that becomes a cultural value of whether it's okay to do that. And you begin to weigh things like the public health benefit, the population benefit versus the cost, the ethical cost and the potential risk to the individual. We make those calculations, especially with biomedical interventions, with drugs and surgeries and all that kind of stuff. We make those evaluations all the time, both as policy matters and also as individuals and as physicians. One way to potentially circumvent that, and I talked to some folks about this a little bit, is that you might overweight the make it easy side of the nudge instead of the make it fun. Because the make it fun begins to feel like, well, isn't that a mandate in a way? It's a sneaky mandate. It's like it's a sub rosa mandate. And what we're trying to avoid here in a way is just saying like, look, you're not allowed in the building unless you prove you got vaccinated. You're not allowed on the airplane unless you prove you got vaccinated. You can't come back to work. You can't go to university.
And that makes it a negative thing again.
Exactly. And certainly in the United States, there's a whole set of politics that makes that untenable. A certain segment of people really freak out at that stuff, even with public health. I would say, like, another digression, this is a little bit weird, but in the last 200 years, public health catastrophes similar to the one that we're experiencing, that we've been through for the last year, would lead to increases in the powers of public health to mandate people's behavior. This time around, there are states in the U.S. that are actually decreasing the legal powers of public health authorities in response to what's happened with the pandemic, which strikes me as, like, that's a really wild shift. shift politically and culturally in response to a public health catastrophe. So if you instead choose the make it easy side, if you just said, well, look, instead of vaccines being only available at certain sites and you have to have, you know, a doctor you can go to or a pharmacy, you know, maybe like there should be vaccine stands, you know, pop-up vaccination centers at every supermarket, at every mall, at every school. Every school nurse should have access to this if you could figure out the technology of preserving the vaccines. Every, you know, make it so that you basically can't go anywhere without someone walking up to you and saying like, hey, you vaccinated yet? You want a vaccine? I got it right here. It has become clear in the U.S. that it's not the gross dichotomy of I will take any medical intervention offered to me to, you know, for whatever my values are, either because I because I'm a communitarian or because I'm scared of getting sick or because I whatever, versus absolutely not, I don't believe in vaccinations. You know, there's a lot going on in the middle, and there are different people and different groups in that middle with different reasons. And so you want to try to figure out how to reach all of them in different ways.
Here's the last thing I want to ask you, because this is really the question that I keep coming back to in the days since Alberta announced their vaccine lottery. And, you know, it certainly seems like this has been catching on and, to your point, is effective. Does it stop with vaccine lotteries? Like, why, what is preventing and why wouldn't governments do this, say, in certain places where they know that there are a lot of votes for their party as we head into an election, or even just for voting in general, or any sort of like bribing people to behave like good citizens with the chance at a prize? Like, this could set a real precedent, no?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Why not lotterize everything, you know? I want to see data first. This is a fascinating natural experiment. If you can actually correlate increases in vaccine uptake with this kind of lottery move, then yeah, you could start to imagine this. And in fact, the whole the nudge philosophy behind behavioral economics and policymaking, I don't think they have it anymore. But the United Kingdom, England had a nudge unit, had a whole like a policy unit set up to try to encourage these sorts of policy net benefit behaviors from people. So you can imagine what sorts of things could you put a lottery behind? You could say like, okay, if you, like voting's a good one, I guess, like everybody who actually votes, you can't reward people for voting. Oh, this is one of the reasons it's hard to test, by the way, is that if you tell people we'll give you $100 if you, come in and get a flu vaccination, or we'll enter you into a lottery, there's some question about whether that's an ethical trial. Like even testing it is might not be ethical, because technically giving people money to participate in a clinical trial is also itself unethical. So it's even hard to test this stuff. But now there's a natural experiment. Let's see if the states who had vaccine lotteries, or the provinces that had vaccine lotteries, have more vaccination uptake than the places that don't. And then if you know it works, then yeah, you know, how about like everybody who you know, rides the bus is entered into, I don't know how you'd keep track of it, or everybody who...
Get a bike license and be entered into a lottery.
Yeah, bike license. Any of that stuff, you know, that you want individuals to do, like if it works, maybe.
I look forward to my future of being psychologically manipulated by governments, more so than I already am, I'm sure.
Well, and that's the thing, is how much, you know, you already, there's distrust in how governments operate and work with us as it is. Do you want to encourage that? There's a policymaking cost here, you know? How much do you want to be perceived as being tricksy versus, you know, being transparent with the people who you're governing?
Thanks so much, Adam, for this. It's a fascinating article. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Adam Rogers, senior correspondent at Wired. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Tell all your friends that you can listen to us every day in any podcast player you want. Our episodes drop at 4 a.m. Eastern Time, perfect for early risers. You can also email us, thebigstorypodcast@rci.rogers.com. Please do. We would love to hear from you. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground
where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.